So Genesis 11, verse 27. This is the count of Terah. Terah became the father of Abram, Nahor, and Haran. And Haran became the father of Lot. While his father Terah was still alive, Haran died in Ur of the Chaldeans, in the land of his birth. Abram and Nahor both married. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife was Milcah. She was the daughter of Haran, the father of both Milcah and Isaac. Now Sarai was barren. She had no children. Terah took his son Abram, his grandson Lot, son of Haran, and his daughter-in-law Sarai, the wife of his son Abram. And together they set out from Ur of the Chaldeans to go to Canaan. But where they came to Haran, they settled there. Terah lived 205 years, and he died in Haran. The Lord had said to Abram, "Leave your country, your people, and your father's household, and go to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will see a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you." So Abram left, as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he set out from Haran. He took his wife Sarai, his nephew Lot, all the possessions they had accumulated and the people they had acquired in Haran, and they set out for the land of Canaan, and they arrived there. Abram travelled through the land as far as the site of the great tree of Moreh at Shechem. At the time, the Canaanites were in the land. The Lord appeared to Abram and said, "To your offspring I will give this land." So he built an altar there to the Lord who appeared to him.
As Dave said, we're looking this term and really into the summer term as well at God's big plan for the gospel, for the good news to go out to the nations. And we're starting in the evenings. We've got a little bit of Daniel to finish off first in the mornings, but in the evenings, we're starting now, and we're looking at God's promises about the nations, or God's word to the nations, or God's witness to the nations, or Israel's role with respect to the nations. So we're looking at that from the Old Testament, God's plan for the nations in the Old Testament. And then in the morning, we're going to be looking at Jesus equipping, calling and equipping his disciples. We're going to do that from Matthew's gospel. And then the word of God, the gospel for the nations, going out to the nations in the book of Acts. So that's the, I think, exciting plan that we've got coming up for this term and into the summer term. And we're beginning it this evening. You see, God's plan for the nations was always God's plan. Sometimes when you perhaps first come across Christianity, you learn all about Jesus, and then you look at the Old Testament, and at first you think, how does this fit? Because I get Jesus, I get the sacrifice of Jesus, maybe I get the resurrection of Jesus and the victory of Jesus and all that stuff, and I get, you know, gospels for everybody and everything else. But the Old Testament is a little bit inscrutable, it's a little bit difficult to get into for me. And hopefully this series, particularly in the evenings, will help us see that there's a key to understanding the Old Testament, but also it's not like this. Sometimes people say, well, plan A was Abraham and Israel, and then plan B was Jesus. You know, plan A, or perhaps plan A was Adam and Eve, and then plan B was Abraham, and plan C was Jesus, or whatever. Even more complicated analysis you might have than that. But the thing is, there's only one plan. There's only one plan. And we'll see that as we look at Abraham, and we'll see that right the way through. There's only one plan. It's just you can't see it all when you're Abraham. But there's only one plan. And it all centers and completes and fulfills in Jesus. Jesus is not a plan B. Jesus is plan A. He's the plan. And the plan begins at the beginning, and I hope we'll see that. So we're going to particularly focus on Genesis chapter 12 and the first seven verses there, but especially focusing on verse 3. But I read that a little bit before just to introduce us a little bit to Abraham. He's called Abraham here, of course, but he becomes Abraham a bit later on, so I'm going to try and keep calling him Abraham, unless I suddenly look down and see Abraham and say that. So it's the same person anyway, you know that. But we're going to call him Abraham all the way through if we can. So God's promises to Abraham here in chapter 12, which are really the first time we hear them. But it's worth just with me turning over a few pages and just looking at how it unfolds. So Genesis chapter 15 and verse 18. So these promises in chapter 12 need to be seen in the context of seeing how it unfolds. So Genesis 15, 18, in the situation where God makes a covenant, the animals are cut in the way that a covenant was cut in those days to say, you know, if I break the covenant, I should be cut apart like these animals are cut apart. And God makes a covenant. So verse 18 says, on that day, the Lord made a covenant with Abraham and said, to your descendants, I give this land from the river of Egypt to the great river, the Euphrates, to the land of the Canaanites, Kenizzites, Kadmonites, Hittites, Perizzites, Rephaites, Amorites, Canaanites, Girgashites, and Jebusites. That promise restated that God is going to bless him, but made in the form of a covenant. And then chapter 17, the covenant is restated. You see that in verse 4. As for me, says God to Abraham, this is my covenant with you. You will be the father of many nations. That's the covenant. That's the promise. That connects with chapter 12 and chapter 15 that we just looked at. And then chapter 18, God is speaking with himself. Interesting. And as he speaks, he wonders about whether he should tell Abraham what he's going to do in terms of Sodom and Gomorrah. And so if you just look down to chapter 18 and verse 16, when the men got up to leave, they looked towards Sodom, and Abraham walked along with them to see them on their way. Then the Lord said, shall I hide from Abraham what I am about to do? Abraham will surely become a great and powerful nation, and all nations on earth will be blessed through him. For I have chosen him so that he will direct his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing what is right and just, so that the Lord will bring about for Abraham what he has promised him. And then finally, chapter 22. You'll remember that Abraham was willing to sacrifice his son Isaac. God intervenes, and that's not necessary. But if we look at verse 15, chapter 22, the angel of the Lord called to Abraham a second time. He'd already called to say, don't go ahead and sacrifice Isaac. The angel of the Lord called a second time and said, I swear by myself, declares the Lord, that because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your only son, I will surely bless you and make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as the sand on the seashore. Your descendants will take possession of the cities of their enemies, and through your offspring, or seed, all nations of earth will be blessed because you have obeyed me. So it's worth just reminding us of that kind of bigger context as we look at chapter 12, thinking about how that unfolds, how it becomes the covenant, how it becomes kind of ratified by God, how God restates those promises and expands what he means by blessing that will come through his offspring, that blessing through his offspring will bless the nations. But it's there really in seed form in chapter 12, and that's what we're going to focus on now for a few moments this evening. It'd be good, Philip, if we can have the PowerPoint. Excellent. Was it already there and I just didn't see it? No, it just appeared. Brilliant. Good. So let's focus on chapter 12 and verse 3 in particular, and just want to look at a few things together. First of all, what does God say? Well, just going to focus on a few key things. So the first thing, I will bless you and I will make you a great nation. I will bless you. You see, it's God's initiative here. See, here's Abraham. He's a bloke who's wandering around somewhere in the Middle East. His father's moving. And there is nothing particular about Abraham, is there? There's nothing particular about it. You see this list of all other people, and most of those other names that are just above that bit that Dave read, most of those other names, you'll vaguely recognise if you read the Bible at all, but if you haven't read the Bible much, you just won't recognise any of them at all. And that could have been Abraham's name there. But we all know the name of Abraham, and you probably even know somebody called Abraham if you met in your life sometime. Abraham's name has become famous, but there was nothing unique about Abraham except for one thing. Here's the one thing. God speaks to him. God calls him. God says, I will bless you. Before Abraham had done anything, before Abraham had obeyed, before Abraham had been willing to sacrifice his son, before Abraham had done a thing, God comes to him and calls him and says to him, I will to bless you. This is what I'm going to do, Abraham. You're just a bloke wandering around the Middle East, but I'm the God of the universe who has plans for you, who has design for you. It's God's initiative. I will. And of course, Abraham's experience is your experience if you're a Christian. You're just a bloke or a woman wandering around in the wilderness of life. And God shows up and says, I will bless you. I'm going to bless you. Do you know what? You woke up this morning ordinary and you went to bed special because I want to bless you. It's always God's initiative and it's God's will to bless his people. And it's amazing for Abraham in particular, but I suppose it's amazing in the big context as well of what's going on. There's a scattered, confused people after the Tower of Babel. You remember, they want to build a tower, they want to make a name for themselves. They're already moving east, they're moving away from the Garden of Eden, away from the blessing of God. And they're going out there and they build a tower because they want to make a great name for themselves, and God scatters them, and they're even more confused than they were before, and they spread out eastward. And you get that idea, they're going further from God and they're confused and their language is confused and there are all kinds of different nations and clans and families, and you can see them all building and all the political intrigue that's going to happen because of the result of all these nations building, and they're lost. But God comes and says to this guy, I will bless you. I will make a covenant with you. I'm going to give you this land. I'm going to give you a people. I'm going to give you an heir. Even though your wife's not been able to conceive children up till now and she's really old, I'm going to give you an heir. And through that, there's going to come blessing to the world. We depend absolutely, don't we, on the gracious work of God. He makes all the running. He makes the covenant with us. He makes the plan. He executes the plan. He ratifies the covenant. So what happens to Abraham in that scene that we didn't so much read but just kind of referred to about the covenant making, that it's God who walks through the middle of the animals, God who ratifies the covenant, it's God who pledges himself to say, I'm going to commit to doing this. So it's God's initiative. I will bless you. And it's God's initiative to bless. What is God saying in this promise that I will bless you? Blessings are a kind of a familiar word to us, but not always understood. Depending on which book you read, or which commentary you read, it's 400 or 600 times that the word's used. I think because sometimes it's not translated blessing, it gets a bit confusing. But the idea is there about 600 times in the Bible, that idea of blessing. And the word family is connected with kneeling, saluting, looking up to, partly because you would kneel to receive a blessing from someone greater than you, a king or something like that. And I suppose you can think about blessing in two ways. You can think about words and you can think about actions. So you can think about giving a blessing in the sense of words pronouncing a blessing on someone. Wishing somebody well is to bless them. Applauding someone, conferring honour on someone, that's to give words a blessing. We might call that a blessing as we say the words. It's a blessing. Now put that together with God and you think, wow. So God is honouring somebody. When God speaks words, which are blessing words, that's really special. That's what you might call a public declaration of your favoured status with God. That's the blessing of God in the words. And of course, God does speak words of blessing to Abraham, and he speaks words of blessing to us. He in a sense, confers honour on us. He doesn't kneel before us. It's not that idea. But the sense that he gives us a position of honour and wishes us well. God speaks words to bless us. But of course, it's more than the words of blessing. It's the actual action of blessing too, when we use that word. When God talks about blessing Abraham, he's not saying, I'm just saying some good words about you because I wish you well. It's also about the activity that follows those words, the actual provision of what the words convey. And for Abraham and for God's Old Testament people, it was about relationship with God, but also expressed through power, prosperity, success, fruitfulness, joy, dignity, the fulfilled worship of God in all its glory. That was the blessing that God promises and then gives to his people. Just as a little aside, it's all right to say to God that we bless you. We sometimes say that in prayer. We bless you, Lord. That's all right. We're conferring honour on God. We're wishing God well in that sense. We're kneeling and looking up to God. So it's a bit of a useful word, really. We can use it in all sorts of contexts. So it's all right to say bless to God. But when you think about the word like that, it really does make it a significant word. And not just a kind of a weak word that it can be to us sometimes. You know, talking about blessing, it's a bit of a girly word, really, isn't it, if you know what I mean? Or a bit of a kind of, oh, bless, you know, and stuff like that. And sometimes when we say, you know, God bless somebody or God bless this, we perhaps don't always think, what do we mean? And what we're asking for and what God is promising is to say, I will confer goodness, prosperity, success, fruitfulness, joy, dignity, safety, security, relationship with me, worship of me as it was intended. That's what blessing means. In Genesis chapter 1 and verse 22, in creation, God pronounces a blessing. First, just at the end of creation, on the last day of creation, on the sea creatures and the birds, telling them to be fruitful and multiply. But verse 28 there's a similar blessing for Adam and Eve, but added to that, which is distinct from all the other animals, and of course, men and women made in the image of God, distinct from all the other animals. The blessing on Adam and Eve is that they are to rule, to subdue, to be fruitful and multiply on the earth, yes, but to have dominion over creation. So God blesses them. And really, to enter into God's blessings is to enter into that blessing, the blessing that was promised, but of course, because of the fall, never really enjoyed, well, not for very long, by Adam and Eve. And God blessed the seventh day, didn't he? In chapter 2, verse 3, God blessed the seventh day. It's given for the benefit of man, that man will be able to enjoy and feel secure and enjoy the creation. God speaks words of blessing then. But of course, after Adam and Eve rebel and want to take charge over God, what is it that's taken out of the equation? It's blessing. What's the word that summarizes the consequences in Genesis chapter 3? It's not blessing. No longer does God say, God blessed Adam and Eve and sent them out of the garden and said, oh, bless you as you go. What's the word? It's curse, isn't it? It's curse that comes as a consequence of the fall, not blessing. And of course, the animals are cursed too. Because as the ruler, as God's co-regent over creation, as Adam and Eve ruling the world, as they fall, the creation falls too with them. And there's no longer perfect blessing for creation either. And after that, as I said already, all things are moving away. People are rebelling. People are dying as a result of the curse. That's not blessing, is it, to die? It's not enjoying peace and security and satisfaction and prosperity and enjoyment of God forever, is it? That's curse that people die. And they're dying all over the place. And there's great cultural endeavour. They're sailing, they're hunting, they're building cities. They're forming nations, but they're not knowing the blessing of God. They're knowing the curse of God. And just before Babel, we have, of course, the story of Noah. And then suddenly what reappears is the word blessing. The Lord blessed Noah. He blesses him with his favour, chooses him. He blesses him as he comes out of the ark and his family and pronounces a blessing on them. And we're just getting a hint that the blessing word is coming back. There's a possibility of blessing now. And then we get to the story of Abraham as these nations after Noah spread eastwards and form themselves. There's a particular line, a particular family line, the line of Shem, one of the sons of Noah. And of course, Shem, that name gives rise to Semites. And the idea of Semites is still around because we use the term anti-Semitic, don't we, about against Jews. Ideas against Jews, that comes from the line of Shem after Noah. And that's the line through which there's going to be blessing. This line will be blessed, the Israelites, the Jews. But in that, there will be blessing to all nations. Sorry, I'm on my second point already. I think I completely jumped a whole paragraph of my notes there, but never mind, it was all right. I think it made sense in my head as I was saying it. I just need to remember where I am now. So, God will bless, and that's his initiative, and we talked about what the word bless means, and I think I just segued naturally, but without thinking, into my second point, which is how is he going to bless, which is that he's going to bless in setting apart a nation, and then through that nation, blessing all nations. There we are, back on course now. So he promises to bless Abraham and then through Abraham to bless all the nations. He talks here in this particular promise, I will make you a great nation, I will bless you, I will make your name great and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you and whoever curses you I will curse and all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. There the word peoples is used. A little bit later the word nations is used and they're similar word peoples. Is the idea of clans, families, kind of groups united by some kind of family ties. And nations is a bit of a broader term, but sometimes the word translated peoples gets translated nations because it can mean nations. And sometimes the word that's translated nations gets translated peoples because it can sometimes mean clans. So really, if you see kind of peoples and nations as these promises, they're kind of overlapping terms. One may be thinking more family, one more thinking a bigger cultural group with a common language and territory and so on. But the point is this, whether you're using the word peoples or nations, they're both there actually in Genesis 10 and verse 5. And what's going on there is the people spreading out and forming into nations. So here's Adam and Eve, and they fall, and they're banished from the garden, and these groups spread out, and they're forming into nations. So what's the significance when God talks about blessing families and blessing countries, if we might call it that? What's the point? The point is, that is the term that was used for these people thrown out of the garden, spreading east. So there was this particular line of these people that is Abraham and his family and what would happen with Abraham. But when God gives the blessing to Abraham, he says it's more than that. It's to all these nations, all these groups of people that have spread out east from Eden. All of these groups are going to be blessed. These nations without hope are going to be blessed. Now, first, that blessing or cursing is going to come through their interaction with Israel. So, verse 3, I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. So, first of all, blessing to the nations, in other words, those groups that are not Israel, Abraham's family, blessing to the nation, first of all, comes in their interaction with Israel. They're to come to Israel, and if they accept Israel's God, if they bless God's people, if they look up to God's people, if they see that this is the Lord, then they will be blessed. I will bless those who bless you, says God to Abraham. But if they reject Israel's God, if they curse Israel's God, then they will be cursed. So there will be that degree of blessing as nations interact. And throughout the Old Testament, the call is for nations to come to Israel, to come to Israel, to see Israel's God. And they can enjoy those blessings. They can become part of that. And of course, you get some key people through the Old Testament who are not Jewish by birth, who are not Israelite by birth, who come and they become part of the faith community. So there is blessing through interaction with Israel, but ultimately, the fulfillment of this blessing promise here comes through the one offspring, which is Christ. There's a word there in verse 3, all peoples on earth, sorry, in verse 7, a little bit later on, the Lord appeared to Abraham and said, to your offspring I will give this land. And then a little bit later, we read it already, God repeats that promise and he says, through your offspring, same word, through your seed, all nations will be blessed. So all peoples are going to be blessed in chapter 12. And then that becomes a bit clearer later on that it's through Abraham's offspring that all peoples are going to be blessed. And that word offspring is the word seed, as I've said a few times now, and it's the word singular seed, which can be a kind of a collective name, and it can apply sometimes to whole groups of people who are the descendants. So it can apply to a group, but it's a kind of a singular word that applies to a whole group, like nation applies to obviously a whole group of people. So it can be used in that way. But it seems as though God purposely makes sure the word there is singular to get us thinking that ultimately, although it would apply to the peoples, who were the offspring of Abraham, ultimately it's going to apply to one person who's going to be the true Adam, the true Israel, and there's one of him, and his name is Jesus. And of course, Paul talks about that in Galatians 3 and says that kind of ambiguity was built in there in Genesis to use the singular word to hint that there's ultimately going to be one person who will bless the nations. And that one person will be the offspring, the seed, singular, from Abraham. He's the true Adam. He's the true Israel. He takes the curse of Adam away. He takes the wrath of God, and we receive the blessing. As Jesus says in John 12:23, he's the seed that falls into the ground and dies. And through his death, there will be the production of many seeds, blessing to all the nations. So that's the promise there. And I hope that's made sense, particularly as I veered off notes for quite a while. But the promise is quite straightforward in a way. I will bless you, and you will be a blessing. And the way that Abraham will be a blessing is that he will start a nation, and the way people interact with that nation will be a blessing or a cursing to them. But ultimately, he will be a blessing to the nations because of the offspring, which is Jesus, through the seed of Abraham. And part of what we want to do this evening is just want to stand back and just admire the plan. Because it's a plan in a context of desperation. Because if you read those first chapters, it's not going well. There's curse, not blessing. But God intervenes in great mercy and makes these promises to Abraham. And we stand back and we admire the plan, and we see that unfold throughout the rest of the Old Testament, and we see that find its fulfillment when Jesus comes. So that's what God says to Abraham. Let's just think of three things to encourage us as we close. First of all, God has a gracious plan to bless. When we look at the plan this evening, what should we do? Well, I think the first thing you have to do, if you really see it, if you really see the scale of this promise that's made to Abraham, is to stand back and just admire it and to say, wow, what a plan. God has this amazing plan to reverse the curse that is the fall. There's the consequence of the fall. By his sovereign grace, by his intervention, to say, I will bless. Some are saved, some are set apart. God has a gracious plan to bless. And it's blessing that we need. That's why blessing is such a rich word, because what do we actually need? We want the blessing of God. We want the curse to be removed. It's blessing that we crave for. Actually, what people live for is blessing. They might not be able to put it in those terms. They might not be able to articulate or even think that that's what's missing in their lives. But what is missing in everybody's life without God is blessing. It's actually knowing God. It's living in the way that we were intended. It's what we need. It's what Jesus defines in John chapter 10, verse 10. I have come that they might have life to the full. Well, what's that a good definition of? It's a good definition of blessing. What does it say to say, I've been blessed by God and I will be blessed? What's the blessing of God? It's to live life to the full. To know God's presence and God's power and the security of being in him and to carry that through to eternity with him forever. That's blessing. To have all the effects of the curse reversed. And for this life, as sin is removed and as power is given, and then all those final embedded elements of the curse are taken away in the new heavens and the new earth, where death is removed and crying is removed and pain is removed and sin is removed and all that consequence, that's blessing. And God has a gracious plan to bless. And life's hopeless without him doing that. And so we're immensely grateful. We should be so thankful that God does have a plan to bless. And we praise him that blessing comes to fruition and fulfillment in Christ. How's he going to achieve all those things that I just talked about? Well, it's going to be achieved through Christ. And to be a Christian this evening is to be tasting already the blessings. We talk about our sin, and that's good. We recognize our guilt and our need for restoration and for forgiveness. But how do we define ourselves? Well, we define ourselves as people who in Christ are blessed. We're receiving the covenant promises of God. So, of course, we always recognize our sin, but we go around dignified by the fact that God's blessed me. God has conferred a blessing on me. He willed to do that. And the blessing is tremendous. It's outstanding what he's done for me. Think about the words in 1 Peter 2. I'm sure they're familiar to you. Verse 9. But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people belonging to God, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. To Abraham, God says, you're not a people, you're just a guy, but through you I'm going to make you into a great nation. And through the one person in that nation, I'm going to bless all the nations. That was Abraham's experience. We stand now in Christ, and we read those words, and they say, once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. Sounds like a blessing to me. Sounds like a very similar blessing to what Abraham has promised. Once we were not a people, but now we are the people. A people belonging to God. A people in covenant relationship with God. And that's our dignity. And we don't go around proud of that, but we go around happy of that and dignified by that and blessed by that. and joyful because of that. And we recognize that is fundamentally our status. Not as worms, but as kings and priests. Not ignoring our sin, but not defined any longer by our sin, but defined by the blessing, the intervention, the gracious work of God. So God has a plan to bless, a gracious plan, and we thank him for that. God has a global plan to bless, and we'll continue thinking about that through this series. Right back at the beginning, God has a plan. And of course, the plan narrows from the nations that are traveling east to this one man, and he promises to bless that one man and to bring about a nation from that one man. But blessing was always intended for the nations through Christ. And the point for us is this, that the gospel is for all the nations. Because we live in the days when those words are fulfilled, that blessing to the nations is going out, as we're seeing in the book of Acts, we live in the days when the gospel is for all the nations, it's for all peoples. That was always part of the plan. And there was always an opportunity for people to come to Israel, but now the gospel is to go out to the world. Now, of course, in a really big sense, mission does begin in the book of Acts as Jesus sends out the apostles to preach the gospel and to make disciples and baptize them. That's kind of where mission begins, but it begins in the heart of God way before that, doesn't it? It's here. The idea of mission, the preparation for mission is here in Genesis 12. God has a global plan to bless. It's not something that we've suddenly discovered. In these last few centuries, God's always been on a mission. And when the time is right, Jesus came, and he came to bless the nations and to be a light to the nations. And the thing is, tonight, we're part of that, aren't we? You know, how did the gospel get to wherever you got converted? Because God is a God who is on the march globally with the message of the gospel, because it was to be the gospel for the nations. It's a kind of an academic, ridiculous thought exercise, but, you know, what if Jesus hadn't come? What would we have been doing tonight? I don't know. What's on the telly tonight worth watching? But maybe telly would not have been invented because culture wouldn't have been so positively impacted by the gospel. But, you know, so it's a silly thought exercise. But you know, if the gospel had stayed in Israel, of course, we could have gone to Israel, but who knows what would have happened? But that's not what happened. The gospel came to us. People got seasick on boats and came across and brought the gospel to us. So we heard. And then the gospel came a bit closer, and our parents or our pastor or our friend told us something about Jesus. They were gospel tellers. The gospel came to us. It went out to the nations. God is on a global plan to bless, and we need to get into that plan. Of course, we're so thankful that it's a global plan, because then it came to this little town of Hayward's Heath. It's not the first place you're going to come, is it? So we're so thankful we live when we do. You know, maybe it went to London first, but you know, Hayward's Heath would take a while. The train wasn't even built then. But we live in a day where, in God's amazing goodness, it came here, and we came across people who told us the gospel. That's God's global plan. We've received that blessing, and we need to get on board with that plan. And of course, that means we're interested in God's good news going out to the nations. But the equivalent of the nations there in Abraham's promise is really all peoples as they spread out, clans, families, groups of people with cultural ties. So we're interested in the gospel to the nations. And when we say that word, or those two words, the nations, we're thinking abroad, aren't we? When you hear me say the nations, you're thinking abroad. But of course, the equivalent is that plus your neighbours. You know, when God calls you to go to the nations, it's crossing the threshold of next door as well. It's thinking, well, where are the tribes and clans in your street? Where are the family groups that don't know the gospel yet? God's plan for all peoples, all nations. You know, you get a phone book. Are there phone books anymore in the world? I don't know. But if there are paper phone books that exist anymore, and you get a phone book and you flick through and you start at A, and has anyone got the surname Aardvark? But that's the first word. And you flick through and you get to the B's, and there's Browns and Bassetts and Barretts and all those kind of things. And I'm going to run out of name ideas in a minute, so I won't go any further. But you're flicking through and you're thinking, well, there's a family. Well, the gospel's for them. It's for the Aardvarks and for the Andersons and for the Barretts and for the Coopers and for the...
from the beginning with D.
And so on through the phone book. And the gospel's for all those clans. It's for your clan. It's for your tribe. It's for your people. It's for your nation. That's the promise. And we're not waiting for the promise like Abraham was. We're not waiting for the promise like David was. Promise has come. Jesus has come. And now the gospel's exploding out to the nations. God has a global plan to bless. And finally, God blesses others through us. There was something unique, of course, about Abraham. But see that in verse 3 as it ends. Verse 2. I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. And then as verse 3 ends, all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. Now, of course, all nations on the earth are blessed through God's work, because that's God who starts it. And all nations on the earth are blessed through Christ, because it's Christ who does the work. But the point is that Abraham is somehow a channel for that, isn't he? All peoples are going to be blessed through you, Abraham. God's going to work through you, through your offspring. And of course, that was unique for Abraham. But it's a general principle that God uses to bless us in order that we are a blessing. To bless us in order that we are a blessing. As I mentioned, we're going to be looking at the book of Matthew for a bit. And just one verse from Matthew 10 and verse 8. Which will be part of what we're studying together. But Matthew 10 and verse 8 says this. As the disciples are sent out, they're called, the 12 are called. Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse those who have leprosy, drive out demons. Freely you have received, freely give. As you have received, in their case, power, and a message about Jesus, a message of the kingdom, freely as you've received it, freely give it. Give it out. As you have been blessed, bless others. And that principle is there with Abraham. It's there in the New Testament that as we receive, it's a bit like in Colossians where Paul talks about forgiving as we have been forgiven. So as we receive all these blessings from God, the blessings of forgiveness and relationship and dignity and status, we want to bless others. We want to bless others with gospel words primarily. As we receive true spiritual blessings, we say these are not for keeping to ourselves. You know, like the sort of vagabonds who discover all that plunder in 1 Kings or 2 Kings, I can't remember which, and they discover all that plunder, and there's a great story where they're kind of enjoying it all and eating all the food and stuff and saying, we shouldn't keep this to ourselves. Because the enemy had all run away because they were scared and so on, because God had caused this wonderful thing to happen. And they say, we shouldn't keep it to ourselves. And just like that, we who are kind of enjoying so much the blessings of God, we say to ourselves, hold on a minute. We shouldn't keep this to ourselves. We shouldn't be enjoying this just by ourselves. As we are blessed, it should overflow in blessing to others. And that's true of us as individuals, but that's also true of us as a church. We enjoy many times of sweet fellowship as a church. Can you say that in 21st century, sweet fellowship? Does that sound a bit girly as well? But you know what I mean? We enjoy great fellowship, warm fellowship. We have great times together, and we love that. But we should enjoy that, and at the same time say, wow, we shouldn't keep this to ourselves. This is a good thing. How can I bless others? How can I be salt and light? How can I tell others the gospel? How can others receive the blessings and the benefits that I've got? How can other people be part of the covenant people of God? How can I begin that work of restoration as I have been restored and am being restored? How can I seek to restore others? How can I bless others? We bless others with gospel words. We bless others with gospel generosity, driven by grace and not by guilt. As we have graciously received, so we want to graciously give. That's true of spiritual blessings, but that's also true of material blessings. We've thought about that quite a lot recently. In the book of James, we thought about it as we looked at our verse of the year last week. As you have been loved, you love. And there's that example that's sitting there in verse 17 of 1 John 3. There's the same example in the book of James that we looked at last week to say, you can't say that and at the same time see your brother in need and not feel something and try and do something for them. As you have received, so you want to freely give. And that's the gospel first. But if it just stops with the gospel, then you haven't really understood the gospel, because it continues with taking those worldly possessions, the blessing that God has given you, the money that God has given you, the time, the resources, the gifts, all those things that God has given you materially as well as spiritually. You say, I want to bless the world with those. And so there's the big theological plan of God's salvation in Christ. But what does it mean to you this week, right this week? It means you have dignity and status as someone from the nations who's known the blessing of God. But it means I want to be a person who's giving out that blessing. So what does it look like for you? I don't know. But please God, it looks like something that somehow confers blessing on people. How will you do that this week? How will you say, at my workplace, in my family, in my street, in the church, I will bless as I have been blessed. I will try and create a culture of love. I will try and bring words of gospel truth into my world, into my culture, to my clans, to my nation. As I have been blessed, I so want to bless this world. Just imagine for a moment if all of you here were thinking that and praying that and living that tomorrow morning. I want to bless the world because I've been so blessed by God. See what God can do. He can bless the nations through you.